Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome to Detours, Melbourne, Australia and the world. It's Detours here on Joy 94.9. My name's Greg Atkins, and I'm here bringing you the fabulous show that we've had for 13, going on 14 years here in Melbourne Airwaves through Joy 94.9. And Jodie's away on assignment today. Mac has left the studio. In fact, Lindsay's not even with us today, so you've just got my dulcet tones. Very lucky. You are very lucky indeed. Now, a lot of news happening today. Some very sad news coming from Norway with some of the tragedy unfolding there that we're getting more information on around terrorist attacks in Oslo and the impacts on local people where there's been a terrorist that's unfurled some tragedy on a group of people at a camp. So our hearts and minds go with you to Oslo, all our gays and lesbians friends here in Oslo, and the other people, your friends and family, that are impacted by this devastation. One of the impacts of modern travel is the effect of these things that happen when human beings don't respect other human beings. But we always respect each other when we travel, and that's one thing that we play to heart here at Detours. We look after everyone else. Now, joining us today is someone who does look after a lot of people with the work he does, is James O'Brien. Now, James, you are with the National Disability Insurance Scheme, and we're going to unpack some of the work you do today with the people that you work for and support. But we're also going to look at and turn you on your tail and look at some of your travel experiences as well, if that's all right with you.
Look forward to it, Greg.
Fantastic. Now tell us, James, a little bit about the National Disability Insurance Scheme.
Well, thanks, Greg. The National Disability Insurance Scheme is a proposal which is currently being examined by the Productivity Commission. The Productivity Commission on the cusp of providing a report to the federal government in the next week or so, in fact by the end of this month, which will hopefully in time establish a Medicare-style support and care scheme for people with serious disabilities to have their everyday support and care needs paid for. Across the country at the moment, each individual state has a different approach to the way people with disabilities are supported in the community. It's fair to say that those approaches have been shown to have failed over time, and the disability community as a whole has been campaigning very hard across the country, certainly for the last year or so, to put pressure on the federal government to come up with a new approach through this National Disability Insurance Scheme.
Now, does it extend similarly to the insurance scheme that operates nationally in New Zealand?
There are some parallels. I'm not 100% au fait with what's happening in New Zealand, but the general principle of there being a lifetime, no-fault care and support scheme for people with disabilities, regardless of how the disability was acquired, is the core principle here. So in Australia at the moment, we don't have that. Each state has a slightly different approach about going about it, but historically, these systems have been underfunded and in some places, largely dysfunctional.
So what does it mean currently? If you're in Melbourne and you're living with disability and you're travelling to a different state,
yes,
what happens? What happens? You know, are you covered in the same way? Or if you have an accident that takes place in one state, what's the state differences and how does it play out?
Well, there's some great disparities between the states. So the National Disability Insurance Scheme is about providing a nationally consistent approach to how people with disabilities are supported. So whether the disability is something which has been with a person since birth or whether it's something they've acquired either through a catastrophic accident or an illness, to have a nationally consistent approach so people, regardless of where they live, regardless of their individual circumstances can bank on the fact that they'll have an entitlement to support that indeed will follow them around. So one of the great challenges that people with disabilities confront at the moment is once they've had to fight very hard to get a level of support in the state-based system, they can't necessarily move that easily. They've gone through a process, they've had to fight long and hard to get the support they need, but they won't necessarily be able to move around the place regardless of their individual circumstances because their package of support won't necessarily follow them. So we're hoping under this new approach with the National Disability Insurance Scheme that their support and care packages will be transportable. So if for whatever reason in a person's life they need to move intrastate or interstate, they'll be able to take their package of support with them. And certainly travel and being able to get around is really key to social inclusion for a lot of people with disabilities. And I think most people with disabilities at the moment would say it's very hard to do.
Now, with international travel and travelling for leisure, even for work if you're living with a disability, but certainly for leisure, a number of people I know that have travelled overseas might have had a profound disability, and if they're not in a position to have a package of funds to support their care here in a way that you can pick up and have a person that travels overseas with you, perhaps supports you with your wheelchair, supports you with your toileting, your clothing arrangements while you're travelling and having your holiday,
yes,
you never get offshore in the first place.
Yeah.
So the first step is perhaps being able to move around Australia and have your support travel with you and be seamless and apply wherever you are. The second step might be, how do we then support people to actually have fully functioning lives where they can get to travel and get to express themselves outside the shores of Australia?
Yeah, look, it's a good question, and I think it's probably a little bit difficult to tell at this stage how it might precisely apply under the new conditions. It will really relate to a person's individual circumstances and I suppose what sort of resources they've got and what capacity they've got to travel and what support they would need. But certainly, as I said before, being able to travel, being able to fully participate in the fabric and lifeblood of the community is really important, and everyone knows that social inclusion is the key to someone's health and well-being, and it's particularly important for people with disabilities.
Now, you're on Detours. We listened to James O'Brien from the National Disability Insurance Scheme, who's going to also talk about some of his personal travels too, through the course of today's show. My name's Greg Aitkins. You're on Detours here on Joy 94.9. And a particular shout-out, if you're living out there listening to Joy 94.9, give you a shout-out if you're living with disability and you're at home and you're experiencing joy for the first time or the thousandth time, you're part of our family and we're part of yours. You're on Joy 94.9. This is Detours, on air for 13 years, on the way to 14 years, with Lindsay, Jody, Greg and Macca. Macca's having a bit of a break to be a Saturday Mag-focused man. And today our guest is James O'Brien from the National Disability Insurance Scheme. James, that music we just played, it's quite a significant piece of music. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Close My Eyes is the song, and it's by a Melbourne band called Rudely Interrupted. Some of your listeners might be familiar with Rudely Interrupted, but five of the six members of Rudely Interrupted have both intellectual and physical disabilities, and they've been travelling around Australia, travelling around the world indeed, playing their songs. They're a pretty edgy, contemporary sort of band. They've got a wonderful DVD, which I watched the other night, about their journey going from Melbourne's northern suburbs all the way to the UN in New York, where they played a couple of years ago on International Day of People with Disability. I think reliably informed, the only band in the world that's been invited to play at the UN.
That's quite a feather in their caps, isn't it?
They're extraordinary band. And Close My Eyes is a song that we're hoping to use for the campaign as a bit of an anthem. And it's very inspirational. And certainly the band is very committed to doing all they can to help make the National Disability Insurance Scheme a reality.
Now, I'd like to unpack a little bit what brought you into this field. What's the journey you've gone on to work where you do now and have the passion that you do now?
Oh, right. Well, look, I've always had a strong interest in social justice. I think for a long time, seeing some of the challenges that people with disabilities confront in day-to-day life to sort of have the sort of same sort of normal, boring lives that we all sort of enjoy, and the opportunity come up to join the campaign late last year. And I thought, look, what a great way to combine some of my interests in social justice, but I've also got a background working in public policy and public relations and communications. So I thought it was a terrific opportunity. And certainly in terms of the campaign for a national disability insurance scheme, the last time this was on the public agenda was probably 30 years ago. So it's extremely timely, and I thought it was a great opportunity to be involved with something significant. And we're hoping, touch wood, that we'll have success, and hopefully the federal government will adopt the scheme at some point.
It's a bit broader than the federal government that have to get on board with these big social policy changes.
That's right.
It's the people have to get behind it. People have to support it. You need bipartisan or tripartisan approach to supporting it. And the investors, people that make lots of money out of digging up the soil, mining the minerals, sending chunks of Australia in containers overseas and getting bucket loads of money in response to that, they've got to give away a bit of that, because taxes actually will pay for this. It doesn't come out of our pockets. If it comes out of pockets, you're enough for a meal occasionally. We're talking about systemic change to support people living with disability.
Yes. Yeah, look, Australia does really well on a whole bunch of other public services. So, you know, education, the health system, even though a lot of people are unhappy with the health system, you know, generally we're pretty well do pretty well compared to other modern Western countries, but on disability we don't do so well. So the unemployment rates for people with disability in the community are generally double what other people would confront. And at the moment, I think that the Treasurer, Wayne Swan, when he delivered his last budget, said we've got an unemployment rate of about 4%, and he said we don't have an Australian to waste. So we'd be of a view that there's a whole bunch of productive capacity out there with people with disabilities, their family members and carers who currently don't get the opportunity to participate in the workforce, who could have their talents unlocked and help fill some of those skills gaps around the country. I'm not for a moment suggesting that people with disabilities could be heading over to the Pilbara to work in the mines, but there certainly are a lot of jobs out there that go unfilled. And certainly there is a big potential with people with disabilities, their family members and carers to get back into productive work. And something like a national disability insurance scheme would certainly help with that.
Now, to change slant a little bit, I want to unpack James O'Brien.
Sure.
Where were you born? What state?
Born in Sydney back in 1974. So, what am I, 37 now.
And what journey took you from Sydney and has eventually landed you in Melbourne?
Well, my parents had moved from Sydney, I think, with work to a place called Kyneton in central Victoria.
No, so Kyneton, man.
Yeah. I spent my childhood and formative years in Kyneton. Great place. I think, like most children, then young person, decided that life in a country town wasn't all it was going to be, and decided that, you know, university and was the way to go. So ended up in Melbourne after that, and then went to university, met my now wife, and we travelled and lived in Melbourne again, and then we've recently started a family and moved back up to Wood End, which is also in central Victoria. So
now these are really the Castlemaine, Wood End, Kyneton, that whole patch in central Victoria is an amazing place to actually go and spend time, just to chill out, relax, or even take a bit of a rural change and head out and spend time living in central Victorian regional areas.
Yeah,
would you go back? Contemplate that? I mean, Woodend's part of it. Would you contemplate staying there for a long time, or perhaps?
Look, I think we're pretty settled. It certainly is a great place to live. There's been some really terrific advances in transport in the last, certainly the last 10 years, with a really terrific rail service now. That the Bendigo line's been upgraded, and it's a fast rail service, so you can easily get to the city.
So how long does it take? Just a bit of a, you know, for people that are listening from overseas,
yes,
we're talking about Melbourne being, we say Australia's the capital of Australia, you know, Sydney, ACT, Canberra's the capital of Australia, but Melbourne's really the cultural capital of Australia.
My word.
This is where it all happens in Melbourne.
Yes.
And literally just outside, in a radius outside of Melbourne, you have these amazing country areas.
Yes.
And if you're talking about 12 o'clock being due north, where is this region that you're coming from?
Yeah, it's pretty much due north. So we're talking about 80 kilometres due north of Melbourne, thereabouts. So all within about an hour's drive or train ride to the city. Certainly very accessible, terrific places to live, great public services, real genuine feel of community in some of these places, and you know, very attractive in terms of being able to have a good quality of life, but also still keep in touch with all of the great things that a big city's got to offer.
And that's the beauty of it, isn't it? You can go into a paper shop or a cafe and you actually know the person. There's a bit of a name exchange. They know you. If you're new to town, they'll make an effort to find out who you are and what your interests are. And interests collide and lives collide and you become a community.
Yeah, certainly Woodend has got a good fusion of the old and the new. It's got a really vibrant artistic community. It's a great place to be on weekends. There's always a lot happening, and it's a great place for families. So it's one of those places which is quite unique, and a lot of those towns throughout central Victoria have got similar characteristics. Kyneton, Castlemaine, Daylesford, Gisborne, all the really terrific communities.
And they all seem to have, all those towns you mentioned, all seem to have a connection back to the past of this state. So you've got large colonial type pubs that still exist and usually still operate as a pub. Yeah. And you can get your classic counter meal that's existed forever in pubs right across this state, stemming back to when we were founded. You can see architecture that's old and quaint, but it's a budding, brand new, cutting edge architecture that people are rolling out in rural regional centres.
Yeah.
New homes, fabulous homes. You've got bed and breakfast places that are extraordinary right across the region. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you bring people to stay with you at Woodend, do they all stay at home or do you suggest a bit of an outing and people stay nearby?
Oh, look, certainly there's plenty of places nearby that make great visits and day trips. Piper Street in Kyneton, which has been rejuvenating over the last 10 or 15 years, is now home to at least two or three restaurants that are hatted. So the Royal George, an 1850s pub, which has been through many different uses over the years, now a fantastic place for foodies. Similarly, Annie Smithers was probably one of the pioneers in Piper Street in recent times, has really helped bring the place back to life. And now you can eat anything from Turkish to Indian, all in Kyneton. So
that's
certainly
awesome.
When I grew up there in the 80s, it was a very white bread sort of place, but now it's remarkably cosmopolitan and it's great to see.
Now, you're on Detours. We're talking with James O'Brien, National Disability Insurance Scheme, and we've actually unpacked a little bit. There's more to unpack about you. I think it's quite intriguing. You do some great work and you're an interesting man. You're on Detours, Joy 94.9.
Listen to us right around the nation.
Joy 94.9. Joy
94.9. My moon, my man, so changeable and such a lovable man.
Joy 94.9. Yes, it is Joy 94.9, and Greg Atkins here on Detours. What a fabulous bit of music. What was that called?
My Moon, My Man by Feist.
Well done. See, that's a good memory you have because I'm hiding the CD cover. Just testing you out there.
I've listened to it enough times.
James O'Brien's from the National Disability Insurance Scheme. James, can you remember back perhaps one of the first people you ever met that was living with a disability, or the first time you had to come to terms with what disability meant to other human beings around you?
Yeah, look, probably difficult to say that the first, but certainly over the last 10, 15 years, I've met many people with disabilities, whether it's physical or intellectual, and certainly getting some insights into their lives and I guess some of the challenges that people face. And I'm very mindful in my role at the moment where I am often working with people with disabilities that there are some little things that we able-bodied folk might take for granted when it comes to little things like setting up meetings, making sure venues are accessible, making sure that you can time things in a way that people have time to get to a place. Certainly, it's one of those things which you need to take, or certainly be mindful of when you are working with people with disabilities. It shouldn't be a reflection on that someone would have less capacity, but there are some practical things that you need to keep in mind, particularly with accessibility for people who are in wheelchairs and have got mobility problems is a major challenge. And certainly over the years where I have been working with people who have got accessibility issues, you do need to take those things into account. So as I said before, some of the normal boring things that you and I might take for granted, such as going down to the shops or grabbing a coffee or grabbing the paper, can become a really big deal for someone who's got mobility challenges.
I went to, I had an interesting little occasion a few years ago. I went with a group of people from VicNord, which is an organisation that do work on disability and sport and recreation.
Yes.
And they're all people living with disability that run the whole show. Mm. And we went down when Federation Square was launched and almost road tested Fed Square on the first incarnation.
Yeah.
So we had people hurtling their wheelchairs down the cobbled path to see if they'd be thrown out.
Yes.
We had people with mobility disorder that couldn't go more than a couple of degrees off centre trying to walk down the pathways to see if that was stable enough or was there a defined pathway they could follow so they wouldn't fall over.
Yeah.
And you had people that were visually impaired going to where the hand railings have been installed around some of the more edgier drop-offs where the path finishes and testing out the hand railings. And you know, that multi-million dollar establishment failed all those tests. Yeah. And but the best part was the Fed Square people behind development of Fed Square then went away and actually improved the whole thing. They replaced the rails with rails that tapered off at the end. It was just fantastic. They actually responded to the input coming from people living with disability.
I think, look, it's absolutely incumbent on government and local governments and anyone who's working on the planning system to ensure that buildings are built to particular standards, that people have got access, that steps are avoided where possible. Pretty simple things and won't necessarily have a huge impact on the costs of building and things like that. But, you know, in terms of making a small beneficial impact on the life of someone with a disability to just make life that much easier to get around, small stuff but very important.
You take it for granted, don't you? You know, have you ever lived or spent time where you've had a knee injury or you've had surgery and you've ended up incapacitated for a chunk of time?
Yeah, look, pretty rarely, but it's going to sound a bit trite, but after a few games of cricket in recent years where I'm getting older and not being able to get out of bed the next morning sometimes, and I think you really do take your mobility for granted. And it's one of those things where sometimes it would be good just to spend a couple of hours or indeed a day in the life of someone who has got some issues with mobility and just to get a sense of how difficult the built environment can be to navigate and get around.
Now, if you're travelling, and if you are travelling in the next few months or a bit of time, have a think about this. Go into your hotel room and where you come off the main room into the toilet area, the bathroom shower area of your hotel room, think about how that door swings. And if you were sitting and living from a wheelchair, would you have been able to enter that shower area, that bathroom area with your wheelchair? Would you have been able to maneuver yourself up to the shower area and perhaps was there a seat that you could have used to hop on and sit under the shower? Mm. Would you have actually been able to get your chair in that door? Because there's particular requirements they have around widths of doorways and not everyone in the past has responded to those requirements. In fact, they might have been built prior to having these standards for people with disability and the size of doors. Yeah. What's the experience that you've seen?
I think it's been pretty hit and miss. Obviously, with older buildings, they're not necessarily geared up to the mobility and accessibility requirements that new buildings are. Hopefully in 10, 15, 20 years' time, we'll look back and say, you know, why weren't we always doing this to ensure that people with disabilities can actually get around Certainly, there's been a lot of issues in the past and probably still currently with airlines in terms of how people with disabilities get onto flights, whether they can take guide dogs and things like that as well. There is still a high amount of education that has to happen with service providers in the mainstream, so whether it's travel companies, airlines, hotels, indeed our own public transport operators here. And at the moment, there's a big debate happening in Melbourne about the taxi industry and how well attuned that is to the needs of people with disabilities. And there was a hearing during the week where various voices were heard from the disability sector about the adequacy of Melbourne's cabs when it comes to servicing people with disabilities. And I think it's fair to say there's a big room for improvement there.
Huge room for improvement. And that's probably all on the agenda when you take things to the table and the meetings you have around Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we're going to come back shortly and we're going to talk a little bit more about the travels you do to get around and get the message out as you seek to establish a national disability insurance scheme.
Yes.
You're on Joy 94.9. My name's Greg Adkins and we're with James O'Brien. And a bit of a shout out to Jodes, who's a bit unwell today. We hope you're feeling a little bit better. Stay with us.
Joy Melbourne is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse lesbian and gay communities, enabling freedom of expression, the breaking down of isolation, and the celebration of our culture, achievements, and pride.
Joy 94.9.
James O'Brien brought that with us. James is from the National Disability Insurance Scheme. And that's really beautiful music, James. I'm impressed. You have a great taste.
Thank you, Greg. Yeah, she does do beautiful music, Lucinda. It's very evocative.
How did you discover your taste in music?
Good question. It's probably evolved over time. I don't know. I'm having a bit of a dabble with... sort of Americana, I suppose, is maybe a way to describe it. But artists like Lucinda Williams and Feist and Martha Wainwright, all beautiful voices and very melodic and just great to listen to.
And we'll give our listener a taste of Martha Wainwright before the end of the hour. Coming up soon, we'll have Pete Dillon visiting, of course, to tell us what's on Cravings at 1 o'clock here on Joy 94.9 after Detours concludes for the week. But we'll be back next week after that. Of course, but today we're unpacking this whole concept of National Disability Scheme. We're looking at what it means for people living with disability, and we're connecting to travel because that's one of the last bastions to cross when people that live with disability have barriers, I suppose, to participating, to fully exploring where they want to go and explore when they travel and tour around. And it's not just when you're on holidays, it's when you're just getting around. If you're hopping on a tram and you want to go from the city out to your home in Burwood or anywhere in a suburb that has a tram line, if you're lucky enough to have a tram that is a low-rise floor that abuts to the platform, you can just wheel your wheelchair off or your walk straight off without any mobility problems at all. But it's not everywhere, is it?
No. Certainly the CBD is pretty well serviced for public transport, and we've seen over the last few years the tram super stops mushrooming around the place, and that they're a terrific advent for particularly people who are in wheelchairs, but I guess also for older people who do struggle with steps. But certainly the outer suburbs are not well serviced for accessible public transport, and I guess that goes to the critical service that taxis provide. And I suppose getting a better deal for people with disabilities in terms of accessing cabs, making sure they're frequent, reliable, clean, well-priced. These are all some of the things that need to be taken account as part of this current inquiry into the taxi industry.
And that inquiry is due to report back when?
Look, I think I'm not too sure of the timelines, but I understand it's this year.
Yeah. Yep.
So Alan Fells is currently undertaking that on behalf of the state government.
I've been very fortunate enough to travel in nearly every continent, in fact, every continent, and explore taxis and see how services are put up. And there's something inherently wrong here in Melbourne.
Mm.
I don't know what it is, where they get it right most of the time, but when they get it wrong, there are some very vulnerable people that miss out.
Mm.
And people with disability are the first off the rank, if you like, for that one.
Yes, that's right. So, look, I guess most of us can, you know, if we miss a cab or a cab doesn't show up, it's not the end of the world. But for someone who relies totally on taxi for their day-to-day support needs and getting around, it is absolutely key. And if someone misses an appointment, someone misses the opportunity to attend a social function, you know, it really does impact on their quality of life.
Well, look, if you just say you've come to Melbourne, you're a person living with disability, you've come to Melbourne, you've made a booking for that exclusive restaurant that you've been targeting here in Melbourne, and you've really wanted to make it to that restaurant, and you don't get your taxi turn up on time, how on earth can you do that? And there are some exquisite restaurants that people will travel the world to see, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. Right here in Melbourne, there's places like Attica, number 53 in the top 100 restaurants in the world, just over in Ripponlea, a very, very smart man running that, Ben Shuri.
So what's on your show today?
Well, today's the actual second birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Oh, please. Thank you. I don't look a day over two. and we were hoping to talk to Heston Blumenthal today, but his father has sadly passed away. So we won't be speaking to Heston. We'll talk to him in a few weeks. So today we're talking truffles and wine, and I'm replaying an interview from yesterday that Leo did on the Friday morning show with Hayden, who was evicted from MasterChef, who I had predicted would be one of the three at the end. So I'll replay that, and also talking to a woman who's bought a wine cellar at what was Pentridge Prison.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. And she said it's a little bit creepy when she goes to get a wine. So all that after 1 o'clock.
All
so.
That and more.
And more.
On dancing the second tunes. Birthday of Cravings with Pete Dillon.
See you then.
Now, you're on Detours, and we're talking to James O'Brien from National Disability Insurance Scheme. And that is a point too, because people that travel all the world and will come to Melbourne and they'll want to see, perhaps go to this restaurant or go to this site. This is often their once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to explore these places.
Mm.
And if you arrive, or even if you live in the suburbs and you're not able to get out and around, and this is your one opportunity to go somewhere, and the travel lets you down.
Mm.
The systems aren't there to support you getting from point A to point B at the time you need to travel. That's a disadvantage. You and I are able-bodied. We can sort of, I assume you're able-bodied. I'm assuming I am too. Sometimes I'm not. We can actually make amends or and take deviations or work out alternate ways. But people living with disability don't have that option.
Yeah, that's right. So mobility is very much the key to social inclusion. Social inclusion means so much for a person's health and well-being. People with disabilities, like everyone else, have that inherent right to be included in the community. And that's why access to some of the things we take for granted, whether it's accessible transport, accessible buildings, accessible public spaces, is absolutely critical.
And I'm going to come up shortly and talk about the other hat. Our Detours colleague, Jodie Wilmer, actually wears as CEO of Travellers Aid, and how they're participating in your fabulous initiative. You're on Detours. Our guest is James O'Brien, and we're about to listen to a bit of music from... Oh, who are we listening to?
It's for... Martha, I think.
It's Martha Rainwright, and it's Ball and Chain. So you're on Detours. Enjoy this music. On Joy 94.9 with James O'Brien, our guest here on Detours. Welcome back, James.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, in the break we were having a little bit of a chat, a bit of a get to know each other offline, and we were talking about some of the great work you're doing. And carbon pollution, carbon tax, that whole discussion around environment is very important, just as in the gay and lesbian community, the discussion around marriage is very important.
Mm.
But both those issues in both of those different communities bogs down discussion just on one particular issue. So has it been difficult for you to get traction around this discussion on national disability insurance scheme needs when there's so other important issues that are existing in society?
Oh, look, it's a very crowded political landscape at the moment. Obviously, the national discourse at the moment is dominated by questions of carbon, regardless of what side you fall on the debate. But it does tend to suffocate out space for any other sort of meaningful national discussion. You know, we'd have a view that having a national disability insurance scheme to properly support people with disabilities in the community is just as important as dealing with climate change. Climate change is obviously critical, but you can't necessarily put people with disabilities on the back burner, so to speak, because, you know, the government's obviously committed to doing something on climate change, but it shouldn't be at the exclusion of every other major public policy issue that needs to be addressed. So, yeah, we are fighting very hard to have our voices heard, focusing on a number of events around the country to get the message out there. On the 2nd of August, we're having what we're calling a National Mourning Disability, a bit of a play on words there. But
a National Mourning Disability.
Disability.
Very good.
So around the country, we're going to synchronise over, at this stage, it looks like about 1,000 mourning teas around the country. So people with disabilities, families, carers, general members of the community, getting together in a whole range of venues around the country to send a message to the federal government that we know that the Productivity Commission report has landed on your desk, that it will be recommending the creation of a national disability insurance scheme. We need to find new and creative ways to get our messages out there because, as I said before, the national debate is very much dominated by one issue at the moment. So we are obviously trying to run a grassroots campaign. We've got about 40,000 general members of the community signed up supporting our campaign website, which is www.everyaustralianccounts.com.au.
www.everyaustralianccounts.com.au.
That's right.
Fantastic.
And increasingly, we're getting a range of organisational supporters, communities, community organisations that have an interest in developing a stronger and fairer Australia. And they're right across the board. So, you know, big and powerful lobby groups like the ACTU, the Australian Medical Association, all the way through to local primary schools. We've had the Country Women's Association here in Victoria sign up. We're having...
Well, maybe Joy 94.9 will join you. So, look, watch out for this space because we might even join you. I think this is very important for our gay and lesbian community where so many people live with physical disability or, you know, have the same issues, cognitive impairment that's happened across the broad community. Now, you talk about all these meetings you go to.
Yes.
What do you pack in your bag when you go to these meetings?
Pack in the bag? Well, I've got the ubiquitous PowerPoint presentation, which... you know, is not a bad sort of way to get the message out there. That the idea of the National Disability Insurance Scheme is inherently a bit technical, so sometimes you've got to try and really unpack it and explain it as simply as possible to a broad range of audiences, who some of whom won't have a lived experience of disability, that they don't necessarily know the issues that confront the system. So in the kit bag is the PowerPoint, then usually a whole bunch of campaign paraphernalia, so stickers, badges, posters, all of that sort of stuff that hopefully get the message out there.
And do you do carry-on luggage or do you put it in the cargo hold?
It depends. If I'm doing a day trip, you know, I can get by with the carry-on, but generally an overnighter, I'll throw the bag down below. I cover Tasmania as part of my patch as well, so I'm spending a lot of time travelling between Victoria and Tasmania. A lot of time on the road, getting out, talking to groups in the suburbs, in the regions, in country towns. I think I might have clocked up, you know, 15,000, 20,000 Ks in the car. So a lot of time on the road, but I really enjoy it. Get to meet a great diversity of people, see the country, and certainly spread the message.
Fantastic. James O'Brien? Brilliant time. Good luck with your campaign.
Thank you.
And give us the website one more time.
www.everyaustralianccounts.com.au.
Get behind the National Disability Insurance Scheme and this proposal. When this report lands from the Productivity Commission, it probably wants people like you and I, James, to be getting on the phone and lobbying on your behalf.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much. And next week, we'll be back on Detours with Lindsay and Jody. I'm Greg. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy your rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. I've been around the world. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Your voice, your radio station. Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.